The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
So there's a bit of a different tactic, a bit of a different approach, and that's probably why President Biden and not his predecessor was able to rally the world and the global community in taking steps against Russia's aggression.
That's Joe Biden's propaganda chief saying that Biden's approach is very different than Donald Trump's. And that's why, you just heard her say it, that's why they've been able to take these steps against Russian aggression. She says this as Vladimir Putin sends troops into eastern Ukraine. It's unbelievable. It's exactly like what they said during the disastrous Afghanistan withdrawal. Even as our troops were being murdered, even as people were falling from planes out of the sky, people like her were there saying, yeah, this is perfect. This is working out great. Vladimir Putin never advanced on Ukraine during the Trump administration. And now he is, 13 months into the illegitimate administration of Joe Biden, and they're blaming it on Trump. Surprise, surprise. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining our growing audience. You can get to the live audio stream of this show through CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3 on that platform. The video stream, though, is offered exclusively at our website, thetrumpet.com. Just go to thetrumpet.com/live. You get to the live stream page, and you can also get to the programs that are posted after the fact if you'd like to listen on demand. So just to step back and look at the big picture here for a moment, Ukraine has basically been at war with Russia since 2014 when Vladimir Putin advanced on Crimea. That happened during the Obama presidency. And these two republics that Vladimir Putin came out and recognized the other day, basically, there's war. War has been going on there since that time, since 2014. So that's the bigger picture. I mean, he did advance on that position of that ongoing conflict, sending in troops and so on. But there's so many different angles to cover on this subject, and we'll try to get to as many of them as we can today. But this point about it being Donald Trump's fault, I want to start with that particular one. Listen to Ann Applebaum on, I forget if this is NBC or CNN, but listen to her comment from yesterday, clip 6.
I think it's also important to remember, going back to something that we talked about earlier, that Putin, you know, has made various efforts to undo Western military support for Ukraine, including during the Trump administration. Why didn't Putin do this during the Trump administration? Because he thought Trump was weakening Ukraine, especially on these grounds. So the problem of Ukraine being unfortified goes back several years, and much of the fault lies in the Trump administration.
Right, right. We're not going to bring the Clinton administration into it, certainly not the Obama administration, and definitely not the illegitimate administration of Joe Biden. It's all Trump. Trump, Trump, Trump. They lie, these communists in the media, these propagandists. They're all like Jen Psaki. This is from The Federalist, just a couple of headlines. The Ukraine crisis is a direct result of Biden's weak foreign policy. Of course it is. Of course it is. He's there projecting weakness. And so Vladimir Putin, he advances, just like he did in 2014. These radical leftists, they think they can appease these authoritarians, these tyrants. And it never works. It never works. History teaches us this. This is from the UK Telegraph, and not exactly a pro-Trump publication. The Telegraph says Putin wouldn't be invading if Trump were still in the White House. That's just the truth. The enemies of the free world see this period as a window of opportunity within which to undermine and erode American leadership. This is their opportunity to advance. Look, Justin Trudeau did what he did in Canada last week at Joe Obama's urging. They know with Trump out of the way, if Trump's in the White House, forget about what's happening in Ukraine. What happened last week in Canada would have never happened either. But get him out of the way, and the authoritarians are on the march, whether it's Vladimir Putin or Justin Trudeau. It says here, President Trump was derided by his political opponents as an isolationist, soft on strongman autocrats like Vladimir Putin. The left painted him as a populist who undermined America's alliances while turning a blind eye to human rights abuses by dictator regimes. Having met the former president, well, this journalist says, look, I've interviewed President Trump, and they've got it exactly backwards. It says here that Donald Trump actually put the fear of God into America's enemies. In many ways, the Trump presidency was the antithesis of the weak-kneed Biden presidency. The humiliating debacle of Biden's reckless Afghanistan withdrawal would not have happened under Donald Trump, a leader who was highly respected by America's military. It just wouldn't have happened. And of course, Donald Trump's been there saying this all along. And he said it yesterday with another statement. Putin wouldn't be doing what he's doing right now if I were still in there. He says here, this Telegraph author, I am convinced that the Russians were strongly emboldened by the disastrous nature of Joe Biden's Afghanistan withdrawal and by the fact that they are no longer facing a far more aggressive and unpredictable president in the form of Donald Trump. Putin has clearly read Biden like an open book. Here was Biden going on and on with all of his advisors. Yeah, Putin's going to attack. Putin's going to attack. Okay, well, you told us that. So what are you going to do about it? You just going to talk? Tough talk. I go toe-to-toe with Putin. Oh, yes, he's afraid of me, says Joe Biden. Even as Russian troops help themselves to the Donbass region, even as Russian troops just waltz right in, well, where's the tough guy talk now? Sanctions, Russia's got a fair bit of leverage with respect to sanctions. I'll get to that later if I have time. It says here, the Trump administration was far tougher on Putin's Russia than the Biden team. They fought, here again, we have to go through some of this, because of all the propaganda that's out there. You listen to Joe Scarborough this morning, or read Liz Cheney's tweet, and it's as if Trump is the problem here. Putin invades Ukraine on Biden's watch, and Trump at Mar-a-Lago is the problem? A statement that Donald Trump makes is the problem? It says here, the Trump administration was tougher on Putin's Russia. They fought an aggressive campaign against the hugely controversial Nord Stream 2. Biden didn't do that. Biden let the project go right along. Biden's the one who made Europe more dependent on Russian oil. It says here, implemented the toughest sanctions against Moscow since the end of the Cold War. And this is all under the Trump years, the Trump presidency. And applied tremendous pressure on Germany to toughen its stance toward Russia. You'll recall that Donald Trump put a lot of pressure on NATO members to contribute to NATO and the defense of Europe to pay their fair share, to pay their 2%. None of them were doing it. And Trump comes in and says to Europe as well, I'm not going to keep paying for all of you. He spoke the truth. And then when that Nord Stream project went forward, I mean, Sean Hannity played this clip last night on his show. He just said it flat out to the German representatives. I can't believe you're doing this. What a betrayal. I mean, there's some tough talk. You're not going to get that from Joe Biden. He's got a tweet here and there. But look at the fruits. I mean, look at what's happening on the ground. And yet still they rush to the defense of Joe Obama. Saying that, well, I mean, yeah, he's moving now, Putin is, but it's only because of Trump. How in the world can you come to that conclusion? Where is this headline from MSNBC. Maybe I skipped through it. Here it is. MSNBC. Why didn't Russia invade Ukraine during Trump's term? Perhaps because Putin was so pleased to see Trump pursuing goals in line with Moscow's agenda. Yeah, they were just so happy. They're so happy. Here's the Trump-Russia collusion narrative. That tired narrative that's been thoroughly debunked. And they still trot it out. No problem. It says here, the Trump White House made increasing defense spending among NATO allies a top foreign policy priority, resulting in nearly all NATO partners stepping up to the plate and pledging significant increased spending commitments. They're talking today like Trump destroyed NATO. In fact, they all stepped it up at his insistence. Now, we were certainly talking along the way about the NATO is going to break apart. The United States is going to divorce from Europe. That is coming. We know that based on Bible prophecy. But look at what happens when you just have some strength. Some leaders that project actual strength. I'm not talking about the kind that Trudeau has been projecting, but I mean a strong American leader who, yes, he put America first, but then he went to Europe. He talked to Putin. And then look at the 4 years. You hardly heard a peep coming out of Moscow. Says here, finally, NATO is in a far stronger position at the end of the Trump presidency than it was under Barack Obama. That's the truth. That's the truth. This is from the Telegraph. It's no coincidence that the Russian invasion of Crimea happened under Obama's watch, and the reinvasion of Ukraine is happening right now under his Democratic successor, Joe Biden. Says here, both presidencies are weak-kneed foreign policy disasters. The Russians know this. The Chinese know this. And so does practically every U.S. adversary from Tehran to Damascus to Kabul. They all know. And so they're making their advance, including Justin Trudeau, including the communists in our midst. Look at what's been happening in the United States these past 13 months. Here comes Joe Obama. And they go right to work attacking America's energy production, attacking pipelines, except for Nord Stream, obliterating tens of thousands of jobs, making America more dependent on the foreign supply of oil, whether it's coming from the Middle East or from Russia. Have you looked at the cost of a barrel of oil from November 3rd to today? It's more than doubled. And who makes money? Oil producers. Who's making money hand over fist these past 13 months? That would be Vladimir Putin. This is a cash cow for him. And now Europe's more dependent on Russian oil? They're in a pretty sweet position here. As I said yesterday, we'll see what the slap on the wrist actually accomplishes. The question remains, how far will Putin go? Right now, he's just occupying two republics or breakaway states that he pretty much had control over as it was. Like I said, Ukraine's been at war with Russia for 8 years. This goes back to Obama. This goes back to Obama and his administration doing absolutely nothing. And people want to look at the actual 4 years where Putin wasn't doing anything, wasn't advancing his positions in Ukraine. And somehow, some way, they're going to find a way to blame the bad orange man. This Telegraph piece right at the end, it says, this is why the next 3 years are so incredibly dangerous. The enemies of the free world see this period as a window of opportunity within which to undermine and erode American leadership before the possible return of a much more hardline Republican administration. Yep, you take away strength from that lone superpower, and what are you left with? All of these authoritarians, all of these madmen, as the New York Post headlined yesterday, and they're taking advantage of their opportunity. It says here, Russia and China will take full advantage of this unprecedented situation and could even open war on two fronts if Beijing's communist rulers move against Taiwan. You better keep an eye on Taiwan. We've had a lot to say about Taiwan over the last several years. Going back even, the past couple, three decades. That's going to happen too. And I'll point you to some of these prophecies that we've been right on top of. You can go back and look at some of the trumpet magazines in 2014 when Putin was devouring Crimea. See what the trumpet had to say. But to watch the media today, to watch them, I mean, they are almost hyperventilating. They're so excited about this. Because here comes the bad Russian, and we know he's bad because he was working in cahoots with Donald Trump. I mean, Putin is a madman. Putin is a ruthless dictator. But he's not the only one in this world. And furthermore, for all of the problems that the Republicans have, for a few of them to point out that to be so concerned about Ukraine's territorial security and not the United States southern border, I mean, people that are making that argument have a point. Why leave our own borders wide open to 2 million invaders? And to hear some of these sanctimonious politicians talking about, we've got to secure Ukraine's border, it's hard to stomach. Listen to this from Steve Cortez on Steve Bannon's show yesterday, clip 4.
If we look at crude oil, which today got all the way to the mid-90s, I believe it's going to go north of $100 a barrel. And if we look at where it was when Joe Biden prevailed illegitimately on November 3rd of 2020, you can see on the chart it was at $41 on this current futures contract. It has soared over $50. It has well more than doubled, and it has been soaring for an entire year. So do not buy the ridiculous canard of an excuse that soaring energy prices are because of what is going on thousands and thousands of miles away. No, Joe Biden declared war on American energy, on pipelines, on fracking, and unfortunately on drilling on federal lands. In addition to that, he and Chuck and Nancy engaged in an exorbitant borrowing and spending spree that sent inflation spiraling out of control in this country and sent the demand for physical assets of any type, whether it's crude oil or nickel or coffee, sent that demand absolutely soaring because capital smartly wanted a defense, wanted a safe harbor against Biden's inflation.
That's right. These skyrocketing prices, the out of control inflation. This is because of Joe Biden's policies, his war on American energy. That's what's causing fuel prices to rise. And so here comes Vladimir Putin. I mean, and this is perfect. It's so predictable for the propagandists in the media. Now they've got something that they can point to for the fuel prices. Now, if you're lamenting the skyrocketing costs and the inflation, well, blame Vladimir Putin. You're certainly not going to blame Joe Obama. They're using this as listen to this report from NBC. This is clip 5.
So next time you're pumping more and paying more at the gas pump, yeah, you can thank what's happening in Ukraine and in Russia for the price of increase that you're paying here.
Right. That's what sent the cost per barrel from $41 up to almost $100 in 13 months. Well, no, Cortez was comparing it to November 3rd, the day they stole the election, to today, from $41 to almost $100. And here comes NBC, as if right on cue, you can blame Putin. They won't even give you perspective. They won't even give you a big picture on the Ukraine conflict. Okay, Putin's bad. Putin's bad. They get that across. They go after Donald Trump. He pointed out some of the same things in his statement yesterday that you just heard from Steve Cortez. Look, when I was in there, the cost per oil, I mean, there was no war against American energy, for one. Donald Trump was promoting it. Donald Trump was helping us build pipelines from Canada to the United States. His statement yesterday, Donald Trump's, if properly handled, there was absolutely no reason that the situation currently happening in Ukraine should have happened at all. I know Vladimir Putin well, and he would have never done during the Trump administration what he's doing now. He's right. He's right. And the members of the propagandists in the media, they know it. In their heart of hearts, they know it. Chuck Todd said the quiet part out loud on Sunday. How come this didn't happen? I mean, just from an observational standpoint, it seems like it should have happened during the Trump years. Yeah, that's right, because you were carrying on with the false narrative for 3-4 years that Trump was a Russian agent. And now they continue with it. You heard Ann Applebaum. It's madness. So the question is, how far will Vladimir Putin go? How far will he go? Is it just these two breakaway states? Or is he going to advance further? Probably he's going to inch his way along because he can gain territory without firing a shot at this stage. So why not inch forward? I mean, Ukraine's a big nation, by the way, 45 million people. There was a report or a commentator on, I think it was CNN this morning, talking about how that there was a law passed recently that said ordinary Ukrainians could bear arms, basically. So if the Russians move through there, they're bound to get some pretty stiff resistance. Isn't it interesting, by the way, for someone pointing out that the citizenry having weapons, having firearms, that can provide protection from an authoritarian regime? Maybe the light bulb's going to go on at CNN. That, oh, I see, that maybe the Second Amendment does make sense. It's a big nation. You can see Vladimir Putin, of course, he covets this land. He wants all of it. We were commenting on that back in 2014. This booklet, by the way, there's Vladimir Putin right on the cover. The Prophesied Prince of Rosh. You need this. You need this booklet for the right prophetic perspective here. Because you're not going to get a prophetic perspective for sure when you're listening to the propagandists in the media. Everything that they report, it's always with this agenda behind it. Always. So you can't get to the truth. Geopolitical Futures, it titled its article, The Not Quite Invasion. And it points out, as we noted yesterday, that Russia pretty much controlled these two breakaway republics anyway. They're sending in more troops, so it's very measured, says Geopolitical Futures. They write, Russia has officially ordered soldiers into Donetsk and Luhansk, and though this certainly increases the sense of crisis, it must also be put in context. The region has effectively been under Russian control since the aftermath of the 2014 Maidan Revolution. It is heavily ethnically Russian and is hostile to Ukraine. Various militias and paramilitary forces have been fighting for years, with Russia providing support for the separatists. The East is formerly part of Ukraine, but it has created its own administrative structures and militaries, which are heavily under the influence of Russia. In other words, Russia invaded an area in which it already had near total control. In the eyes of international law, it was clearly an invasion. In practice, however, it isn't so cut and dry. So there's a little bit of perspective. Now, again, it could intensify. It could lead to all-out war. That's what many of the propagandists in the Western media want. What a perfect distraction away from what Trudeau is doing in Canada, away from what Joe Biden is doing to the energy industry in the United States, away from what Joe Biden isn't doing at the southern border of the United States. But coming back to Putin and his advance, as I say, this booklet gives you everything that you need to know. Jeremiah Jacques has a piece at The Trumpet that was posted just yesterday. It's just referring back to some of the things The Trumpet has said over the years. It says here, in 2008, after Putin invaded his first former Soviet nation, Georgia, Trump editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry said it was the start of a dangerous new era for the world. So the invasion on Georgia, that goes back to 2008. I mean, Putin, ever since he's been in office as dictator of Russia, he's wanted to resurrect the old Soviet Union. And we've told you this for years and years and years, for decades now. The Georgia attack in 2008, my father said, this was the first military strike of a rising Asian superpower, and there will be more. There will be more. You heard it here first. You heard it at thetrumpet.com. You got tomorrow's news today at The Trumpet. Jeremiah says Mr. Fleury even pinpointed which nation Putin would target next. Will a crisis, this is quoting my father, will a crisis occur over Ukraine? This is what we wrote back in 2008. It says that area is the breadbasket of Russia, and surely it is willing to wage war over that as well. Russia is, that is. Jeremiah says 6 years later, that proved accurate when Putin seized Crimea and plunged Donetsk and Luhansk into a state of frozen conflict that has claimed 12,000 lives so far. I mean, 12,000 lives in this ongoing war between Russia and eastern Ukraine. All these Russian separatists there that the Russians are supporting. It says here, with Russian forces now deployed into these regions, the attack could grow far more explosive and reach into other Ukrainian regions. Time has proved Mr. Fleury was right when he said Putin's 2008 strike on Georgia was only the start and that Ukraine would be next. He accurately forecast Putin's ongoing dominance of former Soviet nations because Bible prophecy teaches about an Asian alliance that will form in the years ahead. One other story or headline that hasn't gotten quite the coverage. It comes from The Atlantic. This is from last weekend. Over the weekend, the Belarusian government announced that 30,000 Russian troops on its soil, Moscow's largest deployment on Minsk's territory since the end of the Cold War, could be there to stay. So they're overtaking Belarus. They're advancing on Ukraine. And it's all under Joe Bama's watch. And as hard as the propagandists try, they're not going to be able to pin this on Donald Trump. That Telegraph article that I went through. They know. They're trying to cover for these communists that are running the government in the United States and Canada right now. But the truth is out there. If you want it. If you're willing to do a little digging, if you're willing to read some of our literature that gives you some historical context, that tells you about Bible prophecy, this booklet, the Prophesied Prince of Rosh, I've got a quote here from this. It's talking about this prophecy in Ezekiel 38, verses 1 and 2. And it says here, the use of all three names, Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal, shows that this is an individual ruler of all the peoples of Russia from the west to the east. The reference to the cities of Moscow and Tobolsk helps us see how vast Russian territory is in these latter days. And then listen to this statement. This is from the booklet. This is right here in the booklet. My father says, this giant swath of land indicates the prince, speaking of Putin, will probably conquer more nations of the former Soviet Union. Well, he's doing that. Georgia, Ukraine, Belarus. And on it goes. He's rebuilding his empire. And there's a prophecy, many prophecies, in fact, that point to this Asian alliance between Russia and China. And then you've got the now forming Holy Roman Empire to come out of Europe. And the United States just being squeezed out of the story. Squeezed out. Weak and feckless. Even as we talk tough, look at these great gains of all these authoritarians. There's this piece from Ambrose Evans at Pritchard about the strong position that Vladimir Putin is in. I mean, he's raking in all the money because of the skyrocketing oil prices. Victor Davis Hanson, he was on one of the shows last night. When America pumps oil, we're not vulnerable. Russia suffers with low oil prices. When we don't pump oil, it's the other way. We suffer. And Vladimir Putin, he rakes it in. So he's rich. He's got a lot of money coming in. And he's on the march. And you can pin this on Joe Bama, as well as the advances for other authoritarians around the world as well. Listen to this. Listen to this clip from Justin Trudeau is ready to stand against authoritarianism. Not against authoritarianism in Canada. He's very concerned about Vladimir Putin. This is Trudeau from yesterday, clip one.
Canada and our allies will defend democracy. We are taking these actions today to stand against authoritarianism. The people of Ukraine, like all people, must be free to determine their own future. We will continue working with our international partners to safeguard Ukraine's territorial integrity and prevent further Russian aggression.
You can't make this up. That's Canada's authoritarianism, or authoritarian, saying, you know, we're going to stand against the authoritarian in Russia. That man that you see right there, he sent in the police on horseback to literally squash protesters not even a week ago, just a few days ago. And then you look at the same January 6th pattern that's going on now in the system of justice in Canada, if you can even call it that. This organizer of the Freedom Convoy in jail, denied bail. She's denied. Tamara Leach. Too dangerous, this woman, that organized some trucks to drive to Ottawa. Meanwhile, this man who drove his SUV into protesters in Winnipeg, he's out on bail. No problem. If you carry out actual acts of violence and you come from the radical left, you get bailed out right away. But not someone who organizes a peaceful protest. She's to rot in jail. That's Canada. And here's Justin, how rich of him to come out yesterday and say, hey, we're going to take a stand against authoritarianism. As I say, you can't make this up. Listen to this from the conservative commentator and Canadian, Jordan Peterson, talking about the Canadian banks, you know, the banks that the government can now go in and freeze accounts if they decide that it's someone who might have contributed to a peaceful protest. Here's Jordan Peterson, clip 8.
I can't believe the state to which the country has degenerated. I've been in contact with a reliable source within the Canadian military, and he told me today by email that if I had any sense, I'd take my money out of the Canadian banks because the situation is far worse than I've been informed. And so that's just one of many such messages I receive on a daily basis. So let's talk about the banks. So here's what our Prime Minister did last week. He permanently destroyed 20% of the population's faith in the entire Canadian banking system and stained the Canadian banking system's international reputation, I would say, for decades.
Yeah, and people are making a run on the banks. There's not a lot of press covering this. But what would you do if the government threatened to freeze your account? I think I'd run to the bank and get some money out, if not all of it, and put it underneath the mattress. Some Canadians are doing this. And so you're seeing headlines like this from the Toronto Star. It says the RCMP is working to unfreeze protesters' bank accounts, Ottawa says. Oh, here's the government getting a little worried. Maybe these policies, these dictatorial policies, are going to hurt us. Maybe they're going to hurt our nation. It says here the federal government says the RCMP are working with financial institutions to unfreeze bank accounts locked by emergency orders. They see their destructive policies. They see how quickly. I mean, look at 13 months of Joe Obama. Look at what's happened in the United States. Look at inflation. And inflation, of course, hits poor people the hardest. This is from a Trafalgar poll here in the United States showing that 55% of all voters disapprove of Trudeau's actions. However, 65% of likely Democrat voters say they approve. So Democrats, they love them some. They love the authoritarianism. They love the crackdowns. They love, as I read yesterday, they love it when the horses smash protesters. They love it when horses smash the handicapped elderly woman. I mean, she's out there supporting the Freedom Convoy, so she needs to be punished. And we need to laugh and joke about it if we're in law enforcement. We need to talk about our jackboots. This is from Trafalgar. The largest difference in approval versus disapproval took place among 25 to 34-year-olds. In that group, 100% of respondents disapproved of Trudeau's tactics Uh-oh. You don't want to lose the youth vote. You mean even young people are looking what Trudeau is doing to those protesters and saying, I don't like those tactics. These communists are being exposed. They're backed into a corner in one sense, as I've been saying. But they also are seizing their opportunities. Get Trump out of the way. Get the Jeroboam out of the way. And then, we need to move. Joe Obama picks up the phone, calls Trudeau, and says, hey, you got to get moving. You got to crack down on this protest because we could see that develop in the United States, and we can't have any dissent. Look at this again, by the way. I pointed this out yesterday. The deputy prime minister that's always standing behind Justin Trudeau, and she's, you know, mouthing the words, basically nodding along with Justin Trudeau. She's clearly the one, or at least the one primarily responsible for putting the words in front of Trudeau that he reads. But watch her behind Trudeau's shoulder, clip two.
This recognition is a violation of Russia's obligations under international law and the Charter of the United Nations. Canada also denounces Russian military actions, including orders to move into Ukraine, which is a clear incursion of Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Make no mistake, this is a further invasion of a sovereign state, and it is completely unacceptable. President Putin's speech yesterday was inaccurate and contained dangerous misinformation.
So you can't actually see her mouth moving because she's got the muzzle on, but the way she's nodding along, it's like Sundance says, she's physically mirroring the exact cadence of the speech as well. He's just a puppet. And of course, she's not even the one that's pulling the puppet strings. That would be Joe Obama. That would be the Antiochus. You get Jeroboam out of the way, even if for 2 seconds. And I mean, it is time to move. And these communist authoritarians, they are moving. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback, you can email the show, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
When you look at this world descending into to darkness, as we cover every day in the first segment, it really does serve as some additional motivation to make sure that we're trusting God and walking by faith. God is the only one who can save us and protect us. And we need God and His protection daily. We need God and His guidance. This morning we were talking about some of the history of Mr. Armstrong's work, Herbert Armstrong's work, going back to the sixth era of God's church, the days of the Worldwide Church of God, and just how it was a work of faith from start to finish. And Mr. Armstrong was always on the lookout for open doors. And as you can read and study in the autobiography, you can see so many instances of when doors swung open, Mr. Armstrong just walked through in faith, even when the numbers didn't quite add up. He didn't have the support financially. But God always provided. God always provided what was needed to finish the work. I've told the story just recently, the history, going back to the construction of the Armstrong Auditorium. We broke ground on that back in 2007, 2008, and then opened the doors to the auditorium, this beautiful, magnificent facility. Just saw a great concert in there the other night, the King Singers, by the way. But when we broke ground on that, just a little group, a small group scattered all over the world, providing support for God's work. And my father said, when we were breaking ground there, that the work of God always kind of operates on the edge of disaster. And he said, that's why we need faith. And what he meant by that is that we didn't have the means, really, to produce a structure like that. But he knew, my father did, that the work needed it. We're here to raise the ruins. To raise up the ruins, as in the days of old. Just like under the administration of Herbert Armstrong, a man of no distinguished background as far as academics are concerned, theologically didn't go to a seminary, just a simple man, an ordinary man, living in Western Oregon. And yet when challenged on the point of evolution and the Sabbath, he just immersed himself into a study of God's Word, among other things. He really dug into the truth of God, and God opened his mind to revelations, understanding, wisdom, discernment. And he started with nothing, and look at where it was. Look at where it was in 1986 when he died. The number one rated religious program in the United States, a magazine, The Plain Truth, with a larger circulation than Time Magazine and Newsweek combined. That's the Time and Newsweek of a time period before the internet came along, before you could get to those publications online. Magazines in the 80s, I mean, that was huge. And Time and Newsweek, those were the biggest as far as news gathering is concerned, or news publications. The Plain Truth was bigger than both of them combined. And then the income for the church, that last full year of Mr. Armstrong's life, $169 million. $169 million in 1985 dollars. In Joe Obama dollars, that's probably $500-600 million. All the inflation, the dollar being so much more worthless today than it was in 1985. But how do you wrap your mind around a success story such as that? It was faith. It was faith. Zechariah 4, we've gone through that even recently, where it says, not by human might or power, but by God's Spirit. Mr. Armstrong was filled with the Spirit of God, and he walked by faith, and that's why the work grew and expanded the way that it did. Now, the history that followed his death shows just how fast Satan can destroy a work if people are operating according to human reasoning and if they're living lawless lives, rebellious against God, hostile to Herbert Armstrong, and everything that he taught. Boy, the hatred and the animosity, and even as I was covering in doctrines class this morning, even just the overall attitude or mindset, Mr. Armstrong, in the last year of his life, he said, look, the doors are opening for us to take the 8 million strong circulation of The Plain Truth and to increase it to upwards of 20 million. And then he dies in January of 1986, and a few months later, Joseph Tkach, the one who was supposed to follow in his steps, he announces to the church that, hey, we got to put a cap on the Plain Truth circulation. We're going to keep it to 7 million or less. And then after that, it just kept going downward. And then they talked about the Great Commission. Mr. Armstrong used to get so excited talking about the Great Commission of the church. And the Tkaches came along and said, you know what? It's not really great. You can't find that term in the Bible. Well, how depressing. Oh, you mean the work, the commission of the church that everyone used to rally around and just pour their hearts into? Something that got Mr. Armstrong excited every time he brought up the topic? Now, all of a sudden, well, it's not that great. And, well, we really aren't going to try to get the message out to the largest audience. And, well, we're going to have to discontinue this book. Has a few errors. Really, we found out later. They disagreed with everything in Mystery of the Ages. But along the way, even as the carryover from Herbert Armstrong's time took the income up to $180 million, $190 million, $200 million, and through those crucial transitional years, they were lying. They were lying, saying, hey, we've got to cut back. I mean, we've got to really tighten our belts here. We really don't have the income to send the Plain Truth to 8 million people or to be on 400 TV stations. And so they started to cut everything back as they turned inward and then later took the money for themselves, a lot of them, and ran. And today, what's left? What do you see of the old Plain Truth or Ambassador College or The World Tomorrow or the headquarters campus in Pasadena, the sister campus in Big Sandy, the feast sites in Poconos, the SEP programs in or Minnesota or elsewhere, all around the world? They just closed everything down and sold it all off. And the work no longer exists. Jesus said, I'll tell you, this is Luke 18 and verse 8, nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, shall he find faith on earth? When Jesus Christ comes, in other words, at the return of Jesus Christ, are there going to be any people left on earth who actually walk by faith, who trust their God for miracles? God is a miracle maker. This is from the faith booklet. When Jesus uttered those words, speaking of Luke 18:8, when he uttered those words, he was looking into the future, into our very present generation, which he clearly foresaw, and foreseeing the almost total absence of faith in our time, he asked this question. Certainly the world has almost lost sight of real faith. Lost sight of real faith? Well, your Bible says that we're saved by faith. So what does that mean? If we're a faithless generation, are we really and truly religious? Are tens of millions, hundreds of millions being saved with this shallow human faith in nothing really? Jesus foresaw it. He foresaw a time, this present generation, an almost total absence of faith. Notice 2 Corinthians 13. This is verse 5. It says, examine yourselves whether you be in the faith. Prove your own selves. Know you not your own selves how that Jesus Christ is in you, except you be reprobates? You better examine yourself, Paul said. You better examine yourself to see if you're in the faith, to see if Jesus Christ is actually living in you. I mean, you don't want to end up being disqualified, except you be reprobates. A reprobate is someone who fails to pass the test. He got a failing grade. He didn't make it. He didn't pass. Are you passing the test of faith? When Jesus returns to this earth, will he find faith in you? I mean, this is a foundational doctrine in God's church, a principal doctrine. It says in Hebrews 6, faith toward God. Jesus had it. And we're to look to his example. John 5 and verse 19. Listen to this. It says, then answered Jesus and said to them, verily, verily, I say unto you, the Son can do nothing of himself but what he sees the Father do. For what things soever he does, these also doeth the Son likewise. So Christ wasn't able to do anything without the Father's help and support and power. That's what we know about Jesus Christ. He was totally dependent on God, on his Father. Notice verse 30. It says, I can of my own self do nothing. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just, because I seek not my own will, but the will of the Father which has sent me. I can of my own self do nothing. John 8 and verse 28 says, I do nothing of myself. So how then did Jesus Christ perform those mighty and wondrous works? Well, it was God in him. Notice John 14, a few pages over. This is John 14 and verse 10. It says here, believe you not that I am in the Father and the Father in me? He says, the words that I speak unto you, I speak not of myself, but the Father that dwells in me, he doeth the works. God is the one who's doing the works. That's what Zechariah 4:6 is all about. It's not Mr. Armstrong. It's God. And when God does it, it's a truly miraculous operation. He performs miracles to further his work, to empower his people. In the faith booklet, it says, yes, even as you and I may be, Jesus was filled with the Holy Spirit, God's dynamic supernatural power. This power of God Almighty, the Creator, was literally in Jesus, and the same identical power of the same identical living God may be within you today. The same power, the same God. Verse 11, it says, believe me that I am in the Father, Jesus says, and the Father in me, or else believe me for the very work's sake. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believes on me, the works that I do shall he do also, and greater works than these shall he do, because I go unto my Father. You see, every miracle that Jesus performed was by faith in his Father, by the Father's power. And here he is telling the disciples, look, if you go to the Father like I do, then you'll perform the miracles as well. You'll be filled with supernatural power as well. And additionally, I'm going to the Father on your behalf. I'm your advocate. I'll serve as your high priest, your intercessor. Galatians 2 and verse 20, one last verse here. Listen to the Apostle Paul as he's describing his life in Christ, as he describes how he lived unto God the Father. Galatians 2:20, Paul says, I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. Here's how Paul lived unto God. He did it by Jesus Christ living in him. Jesus Christ. We can actually have the mind of Christ plugged into our mind. Philippians 2:5. We can actually think on the things above. Colossians 3:1-2. We can think on God's level with the mind of Christ in us. What an awesome truth. What an awesome explanation of what it means to actually live by faith. Should have brought some material on that subject as well. I'll just refer you back to this booklet we plugged in the first segment, the 800 number, toll free. You don't have to pay for the call if you live in the United States and Canada. The number is 1-866-930-3024. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Email us, td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.